The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Beyond and hello, everyone. My name is Jonathan Dornbush, and this is IGN's PlayStation Podcast, Podcast Beyond. And of course, as I like to do with any slow week of PlayStation news, I thought I'd begin the show with a 300-line poem to fill some time and space because there's not much else. No, of course. Oh, everyone's leaving. Is that what's happening? Everyone shut off the podcast? Well, we have plenty to talk about this week on PlayStation.
It's a kidnapping. You can't just do that to people.
Don't worry. It's actually 600 lines. Anyway, I'm joined this week by Brian Altano.
Hello, everyone. Beyond.
Lucy O'Brien.
Hello. Good to be here.
And Max Scoville.
And a view hello.
Well, now I'm thrown. I don't know where to go. No, of course, thank you to everyone who's patiently waited for this week's episode. If you're listening this week, of course, we delayed the episode to catch up on the state of play that just aired as we're recording. We're recording this about an hour afterward. So I can only assume PlayStation will still have news come out tomorrow just to screw us over, because somehow they can never let us win.
They just put up another state of play.
I believe
it. Just the second we started recording, there's another one. This is going to be
the
a problem.
PS6. It's amazing. I mean, no, I will say they still haven't announced PlayStation Plus games for March. So that's probably going up tomorrow.
That is true.
A safe bet. Anyway, we'll cover that next week. But for this week, we do have plenty to discuss, even outside of the state of play. Even if that didn't happen, it would have been a very, very busy week in PlayStation. But I do want to start with the state of play, of course. If you haven't seen it or you were waiting to check it out, obviously go watch it. There's a full recap of it and news up on IGN as well. The biggest hits of it, I would say, include Kena: Bridge of Spirits getting release date for August 24th. Another look at Returnal, which is coming in April. Deathloop, which is coming in May. And the announcement of Final Fantasy VII Remake getting Final Fantasy VII Remake Interlude. So there will be a PS5 version of Final Fantasy VII Remake, and you can also purchase some extra DLC that's kind of like an additional expansion in between episode of the episodes.
You know what would be good DLC? Is the rest of that effing game.
Part two? Yeah. What if they just do this? What if they just keep releasing little additions?
It's an effing game, Max.
But of course, we're going to dive into each of these games, but I do want to sort of start out from a quick top down like overview how we felt about it, because before we jump in, we were talking a little bit about this before the show. This is, of course, a February state of play. We're a couple months after the PS5 launch. The specific text that teased this on the PlayStation blog said new updates and deep dives for 10 games coming to PS4 and PS5, including new game announcements and updates on some of the third party and indie titles from June's PS5 showcase last year. So that doesn't really indicate major first-party games or first-party announcements. It gave us a limit on sort of the amount of games we were expecting. We knew it was going to be 30 minutes, et cetera, et cetera. All that being said, I kind of was hoping for a little bit of Horizon Forbidden West in there.
Yeah, I think like hoping for a little more is a good way of putting it. I didn't feel like it was like devastatingly lackluster or anything. Like, no. There's definitely cool stuff in it. But I was saying before to you guys, it felt like a very February ass show. Like, it was just like, it's the same kind of energy the rest of us have right now, which is like, we're putting in our best, which is like a 6.5 out of 7 out of 10 or something. Like, it was cool to get like small updates on some things. I did want, like, I always love the "and one more thing" big surprise. I guess if you're a Final Fantasy fan, you sort of got that, but yeah, it was cool out of 10.
If it was like a musical
you know, it would be the song that kind of just helps tell the story, like just carry the story along. Like it's not really memorable.
The one that doesn't rhyme.
It kind of just serves its purpose. Yeah.
It's the one in between the intro and my shot in Hamilton. It's the it's the one you don't really remember as much. Right. But no, yeah, it is funny now that Final Fantasy VII Remake has now been the one more thing of now two state of plays, because it was before that game got re-revealed a couple years ago. Also the one more thing in state of play. So definitely no stoppage of love for VII Remake. But yeah, it's I'm very much there, too. I think it could have done more, but it wasn't necessarily bad. I think it was, as you were saying, it made sense for February, but I think when we're looking at the rest of the year, and we were kind of talking about this on last week's show of like after the Nintendo Direct kind of being underwhelming, I wish they just at least kind of acknowledged that they have those other things coming. Like Jim Ryan gave an interview this week where he talked about, you know, Gran Turismo 7 getting delayed to 2022, but Horizon's coming this year and Ratchet and Clank and all these things, but they didn't say that here. And it feels like it at the top of the show, if they just had said, we know you can't wait to play Ratchet and Clank and Horizon and God of War, and we'll have more news on those soon, but we have a ton of other great games. It feels like just a simple bit of messaging could go a long way. Maybe, like, I don't know if that's expecting too much candor from a company.
It's not expecting too much, and it is an easy thing to do. And it's still important, I think, to sort of be like, hey, you just like put up, like you gave all this money to a shopkeep to buy a PlayStation 5. And, you know, like that messaging is just, it's a little that will give a lot to say, and this purchase was worth it because we can't give any news right now, but this is still coming and it's still happening and you did good. You know,
you just like, give your money to a shopkeep.
Yeah, I don't know.
You buy your like, PS5 in Hyrule. What is
that's actually the only place to get them, Max.
Yeah, that's fair point.
Scalpers haven't figured that out yet. They haven't gone through the Temple of Time. Speaking of Zelda, though, I actually appreciated the one part of the Nintendo presentation last week where they came out and said, like, hey, we're not ready to show you Breath of the Wild 2 yet, but we will later this year. I think that's a good way of sort of, now granted, a lot of people didn't like that, but I think that's a good way to hold people over. If you come out and you go like, hey, we're still working on this and this, but for now we want to focus our spotlight on this and this. I think
no, it's like it's like at a concert when, or like a comedy show or something, where there's like there's an opening act and there's an MC who comes out before the opening act and they're like, you guys excited for, you know, the main act, the big thing you're here to see, obviously, and everyone cheers and says, all right, well, first you're going to check out this thing that you didn't pay to see. And like people are excited about the thing that's coming ahead, but that's not the thing they're getting immediately. You know, it's just kind of like, I don't know, very, very dumb, like woohoo kind of sleight of hand. So,
yeah, I mean, on the flip side, I do appreciate that these things have always been sort of vehicles for a bunch of games that maybe wouldn't necessitate the spotlight of an entire state of play or headliners or anything like that. Like, it's kind of cool that they do get to put a bunch of stuff in there that would definitely get overshadowed by something new. When they mentioned, like, we're going to check in on an update of one of 2020's biggest games, I was like, oh, this is absolutely Last of Us PS5, along with the multiplayer mode, which was, you know, allegedly like a whole standalone thing. Because that, we haven't heard about what that game looks like or plays like on PS5 outside of just, like, playing the PS4 version. Like, I feel like all of their other big first-party games in the last few years, aside from Bloodborne, rest in peace, we have like some sort of understanding of what they exist like on PS5, even like down to like the PlayStation Plus collection. Like where's The Last of Us? You know, like, is it too soon to get a PS5 upgrade? Is they're not ready to talk about multiplayer yet? Like it felt like it was missing.
I think in general, one of the things that frustrated me a little bit about the state of play is that I dislike it when companies sort of pretend that they don't know what the conversation is, you know, like within their consumer base. Obviously, everyone is very excited for that announcement, for Horizon, for God of War. Like, obviously, all that stuff is like really exciting. And, you know, that kind of messaging is like really odd to me. It's like, you know, most people aren't really paying attention to GQ. You know, sorry to GQ. You know, GQ is a... But like that, the majority of people are getting the news from the state of play, right? And it's it just sort of seems like counterintuitive to me. Like, make those announcements here. Like, you don't have to talk to GQ, and like it's just odd. It just it just strikes me as like not really listening to what's going on, or just like not acknowledging that you're listening. Like mm-hmm. just an acknowledgement that you're listening is enough, like as Nintendo did.
It feels like in part because we really haven't had Sony be direct, and not to lift words again from Nintendo, but like directly communicating with fans in the same way that, like, I would say the Xbox Twitter account is pretty bubbly and like personable to fans. You see their community team talking to people a lot. Nintendo does things like the directs, the Nintendo Minute, like they have social presences of people on there. I don't feel like there is the PlayStation blog, and they have that PlayStation blog podcast, but yet, like, I don't see a sort of figurehead or like a mouthpiece for Sony anymore. Like, we don't really get that from anyone like we did with Shuhei back in the day. Or
I wonder how much of that is a byproduct of just Sony being part of a massive global conglomerate, and the fact that, I mean, Nintendo is Nintendo. They obviously have their own weirdness, and then Microsoft. I feel like Microsoft is just sort of a modern enough company, and the fact that it's all based stateside. Like, I feel like the fact that there are higher ups that we don't even know about in Japan running stuff for Sony. And then I think, you know, obviously PlayStation got sort of transplanted to Europe now. And there's just a lot more managers have to sign off on stuff. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. We're all sort of speculating here. I get the feeling that the state of plays haven't been as, I get the feeling they're kind of a pain in the ass to make, in that you probably have to chase down a lot of people, and you probably have to get a lot of approvals, and factored in like delays and stuff like that. And the fact that, they didn't call it a state of play when they announced the PS5, right? Or when they showed off, that was like a showcase.
Yeah.
And imagine when it's like a super huge AAA game, they probably don't want to share the spotlight. Like, we've seen state of plays that are like exclusively one game, but if they're trying to be like, hey, Naughty Dog, can we have like a little snippet about what's going on with the Last of Us for PS5? They're probably like, I don't know, are you going to sandwich it between Crash Bandicoot and Kena Bridge of Spirits? You know, like, they don't, I don't know. It's
no, it's like that. It's like that thing in Wreck-It Ralph where all the bad guys wanted to be the biggest one in the room, and like they had to be like, no, the room has a ceiling, and this is what we're doing. Relax.
When they showed The Last of Us in a state of play, that was the thing that entire state of play was built around last time. Like, that was the only thing that was really marketed. And yeah, like I agree with you, Max, in terms of it feels like there's something that it probably is a little bit tough to get a state of play together these days, because this is the first general one since August last year. And then in between, we had a Demon's Souls state of play that aired on a Saturday before it came out. And then the Destruction All-Stars state of play that was buried in the PlayStation Plus announcement for that month. Like, it's a name that gets kind of thrown around and used here and there. But like you said, on the two big PS5 showcases last year, they weren't called state of plays for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, even when Nintendo does, like, they don't call it their E3 showcase back when that was a thing. It was just a state of, it was a, you know, Nintendo Direct that's happened to coincide with, you know, the Monday of E3 or whatever. And I don't know. I really wish that they would allow this. Like, they're effectively, like, they're eating our lunch because, like, you know, historically, like, IGN is sort of a, you know, video game publication that is there to sort of distribute and, you know, disseminate information about what's going on in games. But on some level, I'm like, you own the messaging. Why aren't you doing something with it? Like, why isn't state of play like a monthly thing, even if it's not super big and over the top? Like, it would be kind of awesome to have that, like, any kind of consistency. You know, it doesn't always have to be, you know, The Last of Us 3 gets announced, or PlayStation 6 or whatever the hell it is. But like, some kind of like, you know, it's nice to have something to look forward to. And I think our expectations would be a lot more flexible if that was something we'd gotten used to.
Yeah.
I mean, Microsoft attempted the monthly update thing. And the problem is, it's just like, it's not sustainable because of what you were sort of alluding to earlier, Max. It's like wrangling all of those third parties and first parties to show something every single month is difficult, because it's, you know, it's sort of like when you're making like art or music or video editing on a computer, you're constantly saving out files, which is like final one, final two. Like, game design, it's basically you're never finished with it. And so I don't think we don't really get the same sort of transparency there, where people are like, let me show you exactly what I've been working on such a frequency. That said, like, looking at the like to dislike ratio on this thing, like, it's right now, as of this, it's got 450,000 views, 48,000 upvotes, 2,000 downvotes. So it's like, it's mostly like, mostly people enjoy it. Like, I would actually be interested in going through all the state of plays and all the Nintendo Directs and such, and sort of seeing which were the best received ones, which were the least well received ones, and sort of seeing like what's the pattern here, like what is actually like compelling people to say that this, you know, block of trailers and snippets and exclusive world premieres is better than this one, or the ones that are hyper focused on one game, is it better than having this scattershot approach to a bunch of different titles? So I don't know. It's interesting.
I really think part of the problem with it is in that upvote downvote is interesting to hear, because I reached out right before the show and asked people what their general consensus was, and I got a lot of Larry David middling sort of gifts thrown back at me. Yeah. But I think we've gotten to a place where there was a really good year, like a year or two run, where every Nintendo Direct felt like major and amazing. PlayStation was doing incredible E3 showcases. Xbox was finally starting to pick back momentum up on their showcases as well. Like everything was really great. And then because more and more showcases have been happening, obviously there's more and more content needed for all of those. So they can't all reach those highs. But I think there are still expectations for those highs to appear. And so mm-hmm. we're in this weird place where I think we always want what we had back then. But if we're going to have these every few months, we can't necessarily do that.
Right.
And it's an unfortunate place for, you know, the companies making these games to be in, because this is, like you were saying, a chance for some of these games that probably wouldn't be in the Sony E3 showcase if that was a thing this year. Like most of these games probably wouldn't have been in. And so this is definitely a chance to let some of those games get some air, get a chance to shine. And I do want to pivot to talk a little bit about what we did see and how we felt about all of it. And I guess starting at, because we had sort of alluded to it, the one last thing of this showcase being Final Fantasy VII Remake coming to PS5. It's a free upgrade if you have the PS4 version. But in order to get the new content that they showed as part of this thing called Final Fantasy VII Remake Intergrade, which is as Square Enix a name as you can get, you will have to pay for that additional new content that brings Yuffie into the game. Seems to kind of give you like an alternate perspective on the events of Remake. It seems like a stopgap sort of solution until part two. For me, it very much reminds me of they would always, after Kingdom Hearts games came out, the main ones, put out a version called Final Mix like a year or two later. That was like the director's cut. Mm-hmm. So
it's the Game of the Year edition. I'm totally fine with this. I do, you know, I obviously do wish that they would give us an update on what happens after Remake. Like, we waited 6 years, like maybe just even like a logo, like what's it called? Is it called Remake Part 2? Is it called Remake Revenge? Like, what? I don't know. And this is even the way that this trailer gameplay thing rolled out was sort of muddled.
It was very confusing. Yeah. Mm.
It's still exciting. Like, I liked this as a. If there was going to be, you know, a middle of the road kind of big ending, this was as good as any. Yuffie is a big character for a lot of people. Like, I, you know, just scrolling through Twitter and everyone was like, oh my god, it's teenage Yuffie, this is amazing, my mind is blown. I don't particularly remember Yuffie from like the lot, you know, when I originally played Final Fantasy VII back in the day, because she's like an optional character who comes into your party after you do this whole quest where you sort of chase her and she steals your materia, blah blah blah. You know, it's a big reveal for a certain slice of that audience, and it's cool. It's cool. I dig it. I think that at this point, yes, it would be great to get some more information, but it is nice to have something so soon.
I will say, as somebody that isn't immensely familiar with the source material, this is like fucking calculus. Like, this is walking into a like an honors class in a college I'm not supposed to be, like, this is so far. I'm so confused by this, is what I'll say. But yeah, it seems people are happy, which is good.
I don't want to come on too negative. This looks awesome, and I'm excited.
Yeah, it looks great. Yeah,
they obviously weren't going to announce stuff coming to phones on a PlayStation stream, but right afterwards they were like, also we're making an open like a battle royale game for phones, and like a whole, like another FF7 remake that covers, that remakes everything, but it has like phone graphics or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there seven.
Get that real money.
Yeah,
it gets ahead of the real remake quicker than we'll ever get to the end of like this whole remake collection just in a mobile game. But yeah, I'm there a little bit with all three of you. Like, I don't know the source material. So, Brian, I'm very much like, I don't know what any of these new things are. I only know Yuffie from Kingdom Hearts, which I think makes Final Fantasy fans mad. So I'm sorry. But like, I loved the combat in 7, like, but far and away my favorite part of it was the combat systems, and to have new playable characters that will presumably bring new wrinkles into that gameplay. I'm totally on board for. I want to platinum this game eventually. It'll look and run better on PS5. I didn't think the graphical updates looked that dramatically better.
The PS4, I was going to want to quickly say, the PS4 version looked so good.
It's like, so good.
It was so pretty. And like, when I was watching that side-by-side comparison, I was like, I mean, you know, my eye is pretty untrained into such things, but it was like...
That's this generation in a nutshell, is like the graphics comparisons are for the most part like one of those fine 10 differences between two pictures. I mean, I found myself on several occasions looking at one of those things where, and not paying too much attention to whether it's his PS4 or 5 in the corner, being like, wow, they really did a great overhaul. And then looking down and being like, that's the version I already played. You know, it's totally just like this Pepsi Challenge kind of thing.
There's one look where they're walking underneath like the giant plates, and I thought the 4 version was the 5 version, and I'm like, oh, so they just added in a brighter light in the background, like the sun is brighter and just obscures more of the background. That is not what I want from this, but okay. Like, as you said, Lucy, it's already a gorgeous game, so it's just running more smoothly on PS5 and probably loading a little faster. That's fine with me.
I like that they did show off the load times. That's cool.
Yeah.
And then photo mode, which is awesome.
Yes,
it's awesome if you like one. You know, in-game photography. It's a gorgeous game, but also there's so many perverts out there who want to they just want to leer at Tifa. Like,
just gonna say that we are gonna just see so many pervy in-game shots. Oh my god.
I like, we had talked about this when that game first came out. I think this is across the board the game with just the most beautiful people. Like, everyone in this game is just made to be the most beautiful version of that character. So
this is going to be rough, because I feel like when that came out, it was the beginning of quarantine. We're all like, I've looked better. And here we are like a year later. We're like, they're going to look even prettier. They're going to be like, oh, yes, these beautiful people now with 30% less pores. We're like, ah,
it's going to be. You would hope it would help encourage us, but we're still locked down, so I'm not going to the gym anytime soon. But yeah, I'm excited to play this again. I wanted to platinum this game at some point, and now I'm going to wait. Comes out June 10th, I believe, was the release date, which is right the day before Ratchet & Clank. So that week is going to get busy right before E3.
How many consoles will this single game straddle? Like, it started on 4. we're on 5. I mean, that was like a port, right? That got repeatedly added new, like, in terms of like telling the entire Final Fantasy story, which they're already like kind of taking like a side street on. I wonder if, like, I just feel like we're going to be on this show with like beards in like 7 years and like white hair, and we're gonna be like,
kill me if I'm still on this show with white hair. Oh my god, no, long gone.
But you're probably right. The PS6 will be a place to play Final Fantasy VII Remake Part 1. Yeah. It'll be an interesting journey that we're all going to go on for the next couple decades. But, you know, at least it's a nice game to look at before all the pervy photos happen.
At least it's real. Like,
that's true.
To find the way we were like, oh, it's never coming out. It's never coming out. And here we are.
I do want to touch on briefly just a couple of the other exclusives. Speaking of games that come out coming out that look very beautiful, Deathloop, a game that we've seen quite a bit of since its announcement. It's coming in May. We have a release date. We're going to even have more of it at the IGN Fan Fest. I'm sold. I'm excited to play this game. I am looking forward to it. I loved this trailer, but I don't think I need to see any more of this game. Like, nothing that they can show me at this point is really going to change my mind. But I do love that there is essentially a James Bond theme song to Deathloop.
Oh, the theme song was so good.
It's
so good.
Incredible. Like Agatha All Along, that needs to go on Spotify as soon as possible, because it is a jam.
I just started checking my phone during this one because I don't want to see anymore. Like, I'm sold. This looks gorgeous. I say this about, I feel like, every Arcane game, and then I don't wind up playing them, but maybe this one will do the trick. I read something that really, like, I think they were talking about the size of levels compared to Dishonored. And I had totally been operating under the assumption that this was going to be like an open world game, or like entirely maybe not entirely, but just much more spread out than that. So the thought of this having levels totally, that's a stupid assumption on my part, but I am really curious to check this out though.
Yeah, I'm so excited to play an Arcane game again. I love everything that Arcane has ever put out, and it's just this, it feels so, like, I haven't obviously gone hands-on, but it just feels so perfectly that studio. Like, you know, I could almost feel it, like, watching the trailer, you know, having, like, put so many hours into Dishonored. It just, I'm so excited.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married. Let's hear them talk about it. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for 2 women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
It does kind of give me that, I guess, worry, but like I don't make any money from the sales, but it just feels like we may be in that place again with like another Arcane critically acclaimed but not necessarily commercially successful game. Is just like it's so pretty, and the art direction and the style just feels so there, but I don't know if it'll end up being like a mass hit. But hopefully with it being a PS5 exclusive, it can kind of get some muscle behind it there.
Can you remind me if it's PS4 and PS5 or if
it is PS5? I believe just PS5. I will double check as soon as I hand off the next discussion topic, but I'm pretty sure it's just PS5 and PC. I believe it and Ghostwire Tokyo are just new gen.
Well, hopefully exclusives. That smaller install base won't hurt it either.
Yes. Yeah. At least it should probably like set expectations for what they're expecting sales wise. I did want to touch on, of course, as well, I think the other one that I had most responses to of people excited by was Kena Bridge of Spirits, which, as I mentioned earlier, has an August 24 release date, a little later than we were expecting initially. That game was first announced for a 2020 release. It was going to be at launch, but due to, you know, COVID impacts on development, this is Ember Labs' first game. So, you know, obviously they had to contend with quite a bit. I don't think this trailer showed anything that I wasn't expecting, but I think it's still safe to say this game just looks totally gorgeous. Like, it looks like a Pixar game. It's kind of like we would always say that about Ratchet and Clank, and this feels like another example of that, that someone was like, we can do that too, watch. Mm-hmm. And it looks gorgeous. I love the character design. What about you all? How are you thinking of this latest trailer for it?
I was like super into the combat sequences because they started to show some like really, really cool, interesting stuff that I think is going to be fun as hell to play with. Like, there's definitely a lot of like in your face stuff going on. But when she sort of like backflipped out of there and started using sort of projectile based combat and then running up and kind of like grunty attacking just face to face, I was like, oh, this is going to be fun as hell. Like, I just want to like run up on a bunch of these dudes and just beat the shit out of them. Like, the bad guy they show at the end of the trailer that's just like this like tentacle garbage monster, I'm like, hell yeah, I want to kick this dude's ass. That looks like a good time.
What did he do? How do you know he's bad? What's wrong with you? Just go fight things with tentacles.
He's
horrible.
He's getting his, he poops in the forest and leaves his stuff everywhere. It's terrible.
This looks great. I have this weird thing with games that look, I think, this pretty in a stylistic kind of cartoony way, and Ratchet and Clank is totally the same way, where it doesn't impress me in the way that CG trailers sort of don't, because I almost don't believe it.
Yeah.
And it's weird because I feel like I don't have this, like, if you know, when we saw like Last of Us Part Two for the first time, I was like, wow, it looks so good, the grass is real. But in this one, it's like there's something the second I'm actually playing this, I think I'm gonna be like really, really impressed with it. And yeah, it looks phenomenal, but at the same time, if you watch this side by side with like that new Raya and the Dragon
Raya
Child,
and the Last Dragon,
that one, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's, I feel like there's definitely a similar naming convention there, but like also a really similar aesthetic, which is, mm-hmm, you know, somewhere between that kind of, you know, Avatar the Last Airbender and classic cartoony Disney. Like, there's like little cute kind of, you know, cherubic cartoon things, but there's also like kind of a, you know, like a young adult with a pole arm of some sort who's ready to
play the tiny monster. There's a pinch of DreamWorks Zelda somewhere in there, you know, but like not necessarily in a bad way, right?
Yeah.
Well, for me personally, and this is, you know, what I was saying like before we started recording, like, I'm so glad that games that are very obviously aimed at families and kids, you know, the family genre, the, you know, children, like kids and early teens and that sort of thing. Like, I'm really glad that they exist. Kids and young adults like adore video games, and that's awesome, and there's a massive like player base there, and I'm glad that they're not all like playing, you know, GTA 5 or whatever at age 7. But at the same time, you know, it's just personally kind of like the cuter the game is, the more it's sort of like not for me. I'm just sort of like, I'm you know, I'm an adult woman who loves really sort of sick horror, and that's my lane. And so, you know, these sorts of games, like, I'm like, yeah, this looks cool and I'm pleased that it exists, but it's just not something that I can imagine or see myself.
Yeah, no, you want to trudge through a you know, tonally depressing landscape with as a sad dad trotting around his daughter figure. Like, that's,
I mean,
really...
but seriously, like, that's kind of like, that's kind of where I'm at, you know. Mm-hmm. I know what I like at this point in my life.
That's,
I
right.
mean, I think Kena looks exactly like Alien, but I haven't seen that movie, so you know, whatever. Anyway, moving on from
there's so much wrong with that sentence.
I know.
You're talking to like three people that like that really, really deeply gets under the skin there. Like, that's,
well, you
like,
know,
it's literally under Lucy's skin. She got a xenomorph tattoo.
Yeah.
Do I have an alien tattoo?
The xenomorph was just added to Fortnite, so maybe I need to catch up on that lore. We'll see.
Does he get a gun?
I hope. Yeah, if you can play as him, you can have a gun. It's,
then he gets like little hammers and he's gonna go build houses.
He's gonna get a backpack with a puppy
little
in
arms,
it. Yeah, it's gonna be great.
But he's got those tubes in his back. How's he gonna wear a backpack with a puppy?
They'll figure it out. They gotta,
it's
figure
great.
It out.
I play as Predator, and Predator holding like a silly like gun that shoots snowballs at people while having a glittery gold backpack is just delightful. It's the best.
I'm not ready to see Xenomorph doing all those dances. That's gonna make me physically ill.
I make every character I can dance to Dua Lipa. It's very fun.
Like, anyway. I'm okay with him impregnating humans until they explode, but if I see him do the Harlem Shake, I'm gonna die.
Actually, him and the Predator making them do a duo's BTS dance, it's very fun.
Yeah, I feel anyway, physically ill right now.
Happy to help. Nostalgia is great. Anyway, moving on from that, just for a couple of other ones, we saw another look at Returnal. We've talked a bit about it on the show, and I think it's kind of one of those, like, I'm excited for it. I love Housemarque. I just want to play it at this point. I do have a hands-off preview up on IGN. I actually got to see like a 15-minute chunk of gameplay to see a little bit more about it. They're promising that, and for me as a big Hades fan, this is exciting. They mentioned that there is a bit of a, like, a story that you are progressing through as you go through these time loops, like the roguelike element of it just being a run that you just keep going through. There are connective tissues that lead through the whole thing. You will be progressing through a story. You do have stuff that carries over. That sounds exciting to me, but at this point, I just want to play this game. Beyond that one, though, the only one that really, really caught my eye personally, and then if there are any others that did for you guys, please let me know. Sifu, which is a new game from the Absolver studio,
mm-hmm.
Which I've seen both described as like Daredevil and the raid hallway fight the game, but also much more than that. But honestly, that's a great elevator pitch, in my opinion. Anyway, I do want to mention that we have an interview with the devs that Matt Kim from our news team did. So that's up on IGN. You can read more about the game. But obviously this caught some of your guys' eyes. So mm-hmm. Max, we'll start with you. What were you excited about from this trailer?
I mean, I watched it and I saw what was happening and I want to do that stuff. And this looks so kick ass. This is the same devs that did, what's it called? Absolver.
Yeah.
Which was cool as hell, but it definitely, like, I mean, you could tell it was almost more it was achieving a lot of what it was trying to do, but it was still, you know, had its limitations. This looked like they're definitely they've got a little more budget or a little more, like, I don't know if they've got a bigger team or what, but this looks like there's a lot more detail to it. It's weird because I'm getting some Sleeping Dogs vibes, Kung Fu beat 'em up game. I'm so excited about this. Brian, you sent this to us, but the pitch for this is that every time you die, you get older.
Yeah, they sort of buried that in the press release that came into our inboxes after the trailer hit. And I love that. Like, what a cool surprise. Like, I like how old can you get? Like, can you get just decrepit? Like 90
probably.
Like,
I like that it's like that. It's like that Dark Souls logic of, like, if you're bad at the game, people are going to know it. You were going to see that coming. Given how, like, sort of unconventional Absolver was, I'm really wondering if this is going to be more of a straight beat 'em up with the age thing, obviously, or if this is going to have some kind of a hook to how you play it.
Yeah,
I'm okay with it being like sort of story based, almost like the a 2D beat 'em up. Like, you kind of traverse through areas one after another rather than like some open world thing with a bunch of interconnected areas, but I'm not sure exactly how this unfolds yet, but I'm incredibly into it. Like, it is so wonderfully stylish. I think that, like, it definitely is. It feels like it set itself aside from so many of the other games we've seen in this state of play in the direct last week and just like in the year in general. I love that they have this opportunity to make something that's like, you know, specifically, this feels like somebody pitched this idea and they got to make it. It doesn't feel like Absolver was like a little meandering. I won't call it unfocused, but it was sort of like deliberately like weird and kind of mysterious. And this is just like the man will come and punch you in the neck. And I like that.
It looks to the point. What do you think Sifu? What do you think Sifu means? I think it's short for "Sorry, I effed up, and now I'm older."
Yeah,
it looks like "Shut the fuck up." Like, it sounds. I see that, and that's the shorthand, right? Like, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's like there's that like subreddit of like "Today I fucked up," and it's like people talking about how they like pooped their pants in an elevator or whatever. It's like,
Tifa. That one. No, Tifa is in Final Fantasy.
I love Tifu Law.
That one I think definitely caught a lot of eyes, and that will be a PlayStation console exclusive when it launches. I believe it's also coming to PC, but I think the story of the show, to me at least, and of course if there were any others you all want to shout out, we definitely can, but for me at least, the message of this was like, you know, the big games are coming. I wish they had said that. Like, I wish that was not the implicit message but the explicit one. Like, you know, the first party games are coming. Here's a few of the other things along the way to like tide you over in between. And a lot of it looks really cool, but I do think they could have just messaged it as that a little bit better. Any of the other games before we move on that stood out to you all from it?
No, just that Deathloop theme song. That's
Death. It's great. Cool. But yeah, between Deathloop, Returnal, and Sifu, we've got a hell of a roguelike collection coming to PS5. So it should be a fun time if you like that genre, and if not, hopefully 2022 is better.
Did you guys see that there was a security breach at Five Nights at Freddy's?
Oh no,
I can't believe that.
Who broke in?
Somebody has finally broken in to Five Nights. What a weird name for like the 19th title in that franchise. Hey, where the same thing keeps happening every night.
Guys, I have to say this one thing. It's a little bit off topic. So I've played Five Nights at Freddy's, and I enjoy that series. Like, it terrifies me. It's just jump scares. Like, it's like, ew, you have to be very relaxed to play that game. But it led me to looking up Chuck E. Cheese, which is something that I didn't have growing up. I didn't know it was like, I knew of it conceptually and vaguely, but I didn't actually realize that these animatronics like were kind of, I sort of figured like maybe one restaurant had like a couple of animatronics and like every other restaurant had like maybe people in suits. I didn't realize that like so many of these Chuck E. Cheese's had these animatronics.
Yeah.
And I don't, what world does someone think this is what children like? So I went on to this YouTube channel. It was like all of the times that the animatronics malfunctioned, and I understand that that's where Five Nights at Freddy's kind of like came from, right? But like, holy shit, that is terrifying nightmare fuel.
You grew up with this? Oh yeah, yeah. No, I'm like lucky that I was able to go to like a lot of birthday parties at Chuck E. Cheese. And part of the appeal, because the appeal was limited, like, to be honest with you, Chuck E. Cheese is a bad arcade. Like, the games are children garbage, right? Like, you couldn't really go in there and be like, oh, we're going to play Killer Instinct or some shit. It's bad. The pizza was atrocious. It was an affront to God. Like, it was just like some of the worst stuff ever. The appeal was you would go to see these nightmarish mechanical monster men, and they would periodically just either freeze or break down, or like the gorilla in the back would be like, and then just get stuck. And then what was even worse was when they finished their song, they would dim the lights on the stage, and you would finish eating while the dads drank terrible beer, I assume. And off in the corner was this like just these five just cyborg horror monsters that would come back to life at any given moment. And then all of a sudden the lights would go on and would go like, and they would start singing again, and you'd be like, what is going on here? And then you'd run in the other room and you'd like climb on the skee ball machine, and you know, some kid would get sick. My cousin punched Chuck E. Cheese in the face once. His head spun around. It was one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Where I expected that to go.
But yeah, they're making a new Five Nights at Freddy's, which is cool. It looks like it takes place in Discovery Zone.
Yeah, you're not
the
wrong.
Security breach, the Chuck E. Cheese animatronics broke into Discovery Zone.
That is my MCU. I want those crossovers.
Oh my god. I've never played one of those, so maybe this will be it might not be, but,
they added a walking mechanic.
Oh, finally.
That's true, yeah.
A walking sim.
Isn't that like the deal with those? Is normally you're just like staring at monitors and then.
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. So it's like it is a novel thing to be able to jump into a ball pit now.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you open doors from your little security, you know, console.
I do like that they kicked off that trailer with that, like, that woman's voice who was like, if you like horror games, you're going to love this next one. And I was like, oh boy. And then there's like a first person ball pit. And I'm like, what?
I really thought that was going to be like, oh, cool, Silent Hill, finally, it's here.
Yeah.
And then it was that.
So many things could have gone there.
Yeah. And then what's weird is I even knew Five Nights at Freddy's was going to be there because the developers tweeted like a thinking emoji at the State of Play announcement. So I'm like, oh, of course. But still, there was half a second of hope that it was going to be something different.
I was like, Elden Ring is going to be we're going to see a boss fight. Bloodborne 2. Bloodborne 2, anything.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on from the State of Play, I do want to quickly touch on, there is literally breaking news as we're recording the show again. Sony tries to beat us, and yet we are here and covering it as it's breaking. There was a report earlier today as we were before we were recording that Sony Japan was going to be seeing reorganization and layoffs. And Sony just, while we're recording, confirmed that this is indeed the case. This was an unconfirmed report previously. And Sony sent a statement along to IGN confirming this, and that essentially Japan Studio will be centered around Team Asobi, the development team behind the Astro's Playroom and Astrobot games. So localization, IP management, and external production will also be concentrated within the global functions of PlayStation Studio. Here's the full statement, just to read it. It's pretty short. In an effort to further strengthen business operations, SIE can confirm PlayStation Studio's Japan Studio, it's a lot of studio, will be reorganized into a new organization on first. Japan Studio will be recentered to Team Asobi, the creative team behind Astro's Playroom, allowing the team to focus on a single vision and build on the popularity of Astro's Playroom. In addition, the roles of external production, software localization, and IP management of Japan Studio titles will be concentrated with global functions of PlayStation Studios. So first of all, of course, when any of these things happen, our thoughts are with all of the developers who are affected by this, who are suffering any layoffs. Because of this reorganization, we don't obviously have a scale of how many roles this will encompass changing, but obviously our thoughts with the developers affected. I want to hear from all of you, but my initial thoughts are, and I tweeted this a little earlier when the news was first rumored, was that this doesn't surprise me, because as storied and impressive as like PlayStation Studios Japan has been, they haven't really released in games themselves that they hadn't partnered on with like Bluepoint or things like that since 2017, when they released Gravity Rush 2 and Knack 2, other than the Astro series. That has pretty much been the biggest, singly focused games from that studio. And especially when we saw recently the, you know, Silent Hill creator and some of those producers, Eve, a producer who had worked on Bloodborne with the studio, left just in the last day or two. Seeing this talent that was so key to the studio leaving, I guess should have been the writing on the wall that something was changing there. Mm-hmm. But to me, it's unfortunate, because there was such a history, I think, at Japan Studio of like the eccentric experiments we would get out of Sony first party stuff. They were really a house of like inventively changing things up. We'd get everything from Ape Escape to, I believe, to Puppeteer to Astro's Playroom to, you know, co-developing Bloodborne with FromSoft and things like that. Like there to Gravity Rush. There was so much going on in that studio. It definitely feels like a loss.
Well, I think sort of this coupled with the, I would say like kind of decreased impact of PlayStation as a brand in Japan in general, like looking at sales numbers, I won't say like the country has moved on. Of course they haven't, and they probably never will. But there is just definitely less like enthusiasm for like the big AAA $500 console experience in that region right now. And that kind of bums me out. Like seeing that coupled with this, which is like, this is a studio designed to do smaller, interesting, weird games that they're allowed to do, bringing in their own narrative and their own principles and stuff like that. And I think that like Sony is more and more shifting in towards kind of being like a more kind of American studio, right? Like, I mean, they make a lot of kind of like gritty third person hyper violent games, which are great, and they sell extraordinarily well. But to me, Japan will always be this like sort of ubiquitous entity in terms of like creating the video game industry as we know it. Like being a kid reading video game magazines and reading about the weird cool stuff in Japan and the stuff that they were getting first, it bums me out to see that sort of decreased. There's been such like a shift there to the mobile space. There's been a shift there to the Nintendo side of stuff is still doing really well over there. And it bums me out. Like I would love to see more studios underneath Sony's umbrella that can tell these kind of smaller stories. And I don't know where you go from there.
It definitely felt like the Japan studio was the place where like, say, anyone in the Sony stable had an idea for something that they wanted to do that was like left of center, like it would go to Japan Studio. So I think the guy that made Puppeteer, I think he was British. Of course, like Mark Cerny was behind Knack. And it did very much feel like they were like, okay, well, we'll send it to Japan Studio and they can be the one that sort of turns that into reality. I mean, obviously there was a lot of co-development that went on, but in terms of like having a sort of a singular imprint, a stylistic imprint, I think it just became, you know, this was the experimental kind of studio as you say, with smaller experiences. So with that in mind, this kind of feels a little inevitable at this point.
Yeah, definitely. In comparison, I think, as you were saying, Brian, yeah, with so much of their focus being on these big cinematic AAA and really, I think, Western facing and more relatable to those audiences based on the way we've seen Japanese developers, you know, focus on third person action games. These have definitely been Sony's focus has definitely been more on like the Western action game sensibilities. But yeah, as you were saying, I think one of the biggest signs is the sales figures. Like we definitely it's something that I've seen Pear bring up, you know, in our internal Slacks a few times with like sales in Japan when he spots them. And it's like Nintendo, Nintendo, Nintendo for the first like 40 games. Then there's maybe one PlayStation game in there. And it's just, yeah, that hasn't really been a place where they can have a commanding lead anymore. And I guess especially with like Jim Ryan bringing more of a European focus for Sony Worldwide Studios, you know, from that level, as CEO, and then Herman Holst as the head of Worldwide Studios. There's like a focus now in Europe that wasn't necessarily there before. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Right, which is interesting in the grander scale of the console war stuff, because if you look at like Microsoft has historically failed in that country repeatedly, like to the point where it's borderline laughingstock when sales numbers come in and you're like, you sold 11 Xbox 360s this year, like stuff like that, like just abysmally low numbers. But the fact that like they basically, I would say, like not necessarily gave up on competing there, but I don't think they're fighting nearly as hard as they were during the era where they're like, hey, we got Blue Dragon, it's an exclusive JRPG, you know, like they moved on from that. And so for Sony to like, you know, sideline their studios here and have less of an impact with console sales, it basically both companies have just handed that country to Nintendo and mobile, and that's weird. Like, it's just weird to see. Like, obviously these are Sony's doing immensely well globally, like, and so they don't necessarily need Japan, but it sucks. Like, it just sucks to see, you know.
I don't think either of those companies will ever admit defeat in Japan. Yeah. I think there will always be a game plan. Like, we chatted to Microsoft about like what their, you know, sort of ventures into Japan were going to be for the Xbox Series X, and like they had this whole game plan. And I don't know how the Series X is performing in Japan. I can imagine it's slow going, at least right now. But it will still be a market that they'll both always try to conquer and regain ground in, because it's such a massive market. So I think right now, yes, we're seeing a complete Nintendo dominance, but I don't think that means that anyone will throw up their hands.
Right, right. I mean, that's the beauty of all this, right? Like, you're never really promised tomorrow when it comes to all, like, there are just the ebb and flow of the market leaders in every region. Like, that's what makes this so fun. The console wars are just constantly like the audience is fickle. The companies are constantly taking new risks and crazy new ideas, sometimes to their own detriment. And, you know, in 3-4 years, maybe this will be completely upside down. Who knows?
Yeah. And we will also probably see, I think, Sony continue to, at least in that market, invest in partnerships, like with Final Fantasy VII Remake and Final Fantasy XVI. And obviously, you know, Death Stranding on that side. And if they continue to do anything with Kojima, if anything on the Silent Hill front ever comes true, I would not be shocked to see any of the Konami partnerships be with Sony. That feels like a sort of natural fit.
FromSoft, Capcom, all of those companies, like they're, you know.
I wonder if we'll see any sort of older franchises get dusted off or farmed out to third parties. Because obviously, you know, playing Astrobot, it's clear that there is like we all kind of noted this. It seems much more like PlayStation is celebrating its history and its, you know, the legacy of its IPs. And there's, you know, there's nods to, you know, Gravity Rush and Ape Escape and stuff like that in there. And it's there's also that sort of, this is obviously, you know, this does come with layoffs. It's a restructuring. We're not really privy to the details of that, but there is also that certain degree of like, you know, Plato's Shiprib when it comes to studios, where the studio is known for these games that were made over the course of, you know, 20 years, however long, and multiple people kind of came and went throughout that time. And how, you know, how many people need to get removed from a studio before that is a fundamentally different studio? So,
right.
You know, maybe, exactly. Maybe we'll see like a totally interesting kind of like, restructuring and, you know, Asobi, Mm-hmm. Or, you know, maybe this is, you know, a changing of the guard or whatever.
There's also that really cool thing that happens where like a new team entirely will take on a beloved franchise and reinvent it. Like God of War is one of those things that I think that like a lot of people will kind of roll their eyes at the idea of that franchise after a while, because it sort of like ran its course. And there's like a lot of really cool ideas and a lot of great games in there. But they just put that in the hands of a new team. Some people that worked on the old ones, some people that had brand new ideas, and reinvented it, and it became, you know, like one of the most like critically acclaimed games of all time.
Kojima Ape Escape.
Yeah, sure, great. I'm into it. I'm very into it. The silver lining here is that we're getting more Astrobot, right? Like we're gonna look at the positive here, which is, you know, the best selling PS5 game. Some good news.
It's true.
I want more of that game.
100% install base. Yeah,
dude. Yeah, I was honestly like one of my favorite. That's probably one of my favorite like console launch games ever made. Like in terms of like the experience that I had with that, platinuming it like top to bottom. Just like, yeah, if they give us a new one of those like every year and change, and it's, you know, just a bunch of new levels, a bunch of new cool stuff, I'm so into that. So
yeah, my guess would be that team would probably focus on both experiences that will work within and without of VR at this point, because I think Astro's Playroom on its own is so much fun, but Astrobot was also like a PSVR seller. And so I think they're going to probably be working on an Astrobot Rescue Mission 2 for PSVR, but I would also love to see Astro's Playroom 2, as weird as that is. Like, I think both of those things can exist. I would imagine with them restructuring this way, they're not going to limit that team to just VR, probably.
Do you know what they should do? They should announce like in a blog post on like a Tuesday morning at 6 a.m. Mm-hmm. another PSVR.
Well, good news for you, Brian. They did. Obviously, I know we're running a little bit longer, so if anyone has understand end of the day as well. But yeah, I do definitely want to touch on that. The PSVR 2, you know, before the state of play was announced, it's just not coming this year. We didn't get any look at it. We don't really know what it will hold on to from the VR headset that's come before the PSVR headset. But we do know that it will connect to the PS5 with a single cord to simplify setup. Hashtag single cord life.
Ooh, I want no cords.
I do want to talk about that in a second, because I did have a few interesting conversations about like why we think it's still a cord. But also that it'll be a next-gen VR system that enhances everything from resolution to field of view to tracking input, and will also include new controllers.
There it is.
The Move controllers can be put to rest after three generations, and they will incorporate some of the key features found in the DualSense, along with a focus on great ergonomics.
A lot of people don't know this, but Ronald Reagan was president when the Move controllers first announced. That's how effing old they are. No, this is great. I'm like, you know, I'm throwing shade at the one cable. I'm okay with it. That's fine. There's one cable on my Oculus when I forget to charge it. Like, it's, you know, it's, I can deal with that. We complain about the big, like, you know, snake's nest that we've had to deal with every time we plug in a PSVR before this. So this is cool. I'm super into this.
I think the single cord thing for me, I understand why it's not completely wireless, because it, one, keeps you literally like, and also figuratively tethered to focusing on it being a PS5 analogous device, but it also probably helps with power, and there doesn't have to be an internal like huge battery and hard drive space. Like it doesn't have to rest in there, and the headset can just be the headset, would be my guess for some of those reasons. But yeah, I am all for a smooth PSVR headset. I have the extension like thing for the camera for my PS5 to use the PSVR on it. I have not set up my PSVR in 6 months because it is just too much of a hassle in my, like, in the back of my mind, having to detangle, as you said, that nest of wires is just not, it's not what I want to do right now. And if I plug that thing in, I'm kind of committed. So in ease of use, I think is going to be key here. I'm glad the controllers will have DualSense capabilities in them. That's a nice bonus as well. But I think for me, the biggest thing, like we've talked a bit, you know, on and off about PSVR cadence on here. It's good to know they're continuing to support it. I hope that from what we see for PSVR 2 is a more steady stream of releases, because I think, sort of like looking back on the show, we very much have had like man, it's a PSVR drought for 8 months, and then there's like 2 months of a lot of great games, and then it's another drought for most of a year, and then another couple great games. That, like, that cadence, I don't think served the headset well, especially as a add-on purchase.
I mean, right. I'm just saying I'm kind of sort of a little surprised that there is a PSVR 2 in the first place. Like, I, you know, the market certainly hasn't pointed towards there being an amazing breakthrough in VR sales, or like, you know, finally it's VR's time in the sun. Like, it still feels kind of like it never hit that peak that we were talking about when PSVR and Oculus and all of those companies were, PlayStation rather, were making their VR, you know, footprint. Like, I don't think we ever got there. I mean, Half-Life Alyx, no. I feel, is the closest we got to, like, this is, you know, we need this. You need this. You need a headset. This, like, if you love video games and this is what, you know, I'm surprised that Sony is still kind of in the game, to be honest. Like, well, I know this is kind of like a Debbie Downer thing to say, but...
No. You're completely... I mean, this PSVR it sold... It's the best-selling, like, sort of standalone VR headset, and or not standalone, but VR headset, period. And it sold half as well as the Wii U did. Like, and that, like, that's important to remember. Like, and it has a phenomenal attach rate. Like, people who buy tons of software, and that's great. And this is great news for VR as a sort of, like, medium, because this is, you know... A gigantic publisher, company, video game developer, not throwing their hat in the ring, but keeping it there, or their, you know, your face hat or whatever you want to call it. That's awesome. It's great for like VR enthusiasts in general. But yeah, this is still companies repeatedly attempting to sort of like break through that layer of like sort of like a small pocket of enthusiasts. And so we'll see what happens. Like, I'm glad they're trying again, or continuing to try.
That the stats about the PSVR selling half as many as the Wii, I know it was at one point the best selling VR headset. I feel like that was pre Oculus Quest, which I know definitely.
I believe it was. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I mean, anecdotally, my stepmom has an Oculus Quest, and she's not a person who would buy a VR headset. In if you go into my head, ask me 5 years ago, would she be into that? I'm like, no, that's not the thing she wants. And
gun in my head is Oculus Quest exclusive, so I could see why.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Quest has definitely taken, I think, at least like the mind share.
Definitely got a pretty good mind share. And then they were like, but you need a Facebook account to keep doing this. And that turned a lot of people off. I saw like a pretty interesting take on this, where at this point, you know, there's an established sort of there are enough PSVR games out there that it doesn't seem like a total like leap of faith to jump on that. But at the same time, the you know, Valve headsets are, I'm not going to say prohibitively expensive, but they're definitely a lot more expensive. Like at one point, I think the PSVR was the cheapest way to get into VR. And since then, it's become the Quest, or, you know, the lower end, whatever the things are. But I'm glad that Sony's sticking with it. I think it shows a lot. Like, I don't think VR is ever going to happen. But as video games have become so mainstream and ubiquitous, it's kind of nice that there still is some, you know, like nerdy tech hobby that is like you can kind of, you know, escape into.
Yeah.
And I really hope that, like, we've seen Sony starting to put first party games on PC. I hope they make this thing compatible with PC, because I think that would really help it kind of, you know, find a home, or in many homes.
Yeah, no, that's a really brilliant idea. I hadn't even really thought of that. I think that's like one of the main issues holding back VR right now. Is, you know, it's sort of so scattershot. Like, it's an incredibly fragmented community. Like, when you want to play a game on Oculus, you're like, do I need the Rift, the Quest? Do I have to tether to a PC for this? For PSVR, hooking it up to a PS5 is just a nightmare I don't even want to deal with. It involves like getting multiple dongles in the mail. I'm good. Like, I'm okay. And I love getting mail in quarantine. It's like, it's so tragic. Like,
I don't know why.
See?
Everyone, my friend got one.
there's obviously some multiple people are looking at the bottom line on VR and going, worth it. And we don't have that. We don't have those numbers. Right. And so, like, I'm glad that they're looking at that and they're going, OK, there's still like a means to an end here to develop and put money into development for these games, this hardware, this software. But more importantly, like, I don't know, we just got brand new PlayStation hardware. It's awesome. I'm excited to see what they do with VR, because I know that they're going to do something that's just like a little bit offbeat. It won't be like, there won't be Facebook in the back corner being like, aha, send me your photos. Like, they're gross. And so this, I'm into this. We'll see how it pans out.
Yeah. And absolutely the point of like, it may, I would love if it's compatible with PC. I agree, because it is sort of, it's the one like console specific VR headset right now, other than of course the Nintendo Labo. And so it's locked off from the rest of that community in a weird way. Whereas, you know, Oculus, HTC Vive, like all those things are different companies, but they're all on PC at the end of the day. And there is a uniformity to that community that PSVR kind of feels a little bit separate from sometimes. So that would definitely go a long way. But speaking of PC as well, it is definitely worth mentioning that also this week we learned that more PS4 games will be coming to PC, starting with Days Gone this spring. More.
Just a real. I can't believe it.
The nerve of these people.
It's,
what about me? How are you going to play it with a keyboard? That's madness.
Obviously, this
food only tastes good when other people can't eat it. Watch me eat my food.
Obviously, this marks the end of PlayStation's dominance in the gaming space. I think it's safe to say, and that this is just their fall from grace begins here. No, of course, we wanted to bring this up. One, to mention that, you know, this follows in the footsteps of Horizon Zero Dawn last year. We're going to get more. We could speculate on what more will be, but I think it is definitely worth addressing the thing, as a few of us did on Twitter when this news came out, that PlayStation putting years old exclusives on PC does not invalidate the game you played and enjoyed as an exclusive to that console in any way. This is.
Can I ask a question? Like,
yes,
it makes so much aggressive sense to me from a business standpoint to do this. And also, I don't see it as being anti-consumer at all. These games have been out for years. What were people actually pissed off? Like, or did we just assume that they would be pissed off?
I've seen a bit of it.
There were people pissed off on YouTube and in the comments in the official announcement. But I do think we have reached many, many moons ago. We reached this sort of like preemptively daggers out to attack anybody who is pissed off. And like, we're doing that sort of like loop through like thing where we're like, you're mad and I'm mad at you for being mad. And people are like, I'm not that mad. I don't think it's that big of a deal personally, but I think this is like, we did see that happen with Horizon and Death Stranding.
I remember, for sure.
The volume of the conversation, I definitely wasn't as loud this time, but I do think it's just worth reiterating. So clear financial, like business sense for them to do this, because they're not putting Horizon Forbidden West on PC day and date. Like, they put Horizon on PC so more people would like Horizon and then PS5 to play Horizon Forbidden West.
But then there'll be PC gamers playing our PlayStations.
Oh no, you're right. But they can't earn trophies, so sucks for them. Mm-hmm. Actually, I don't know if you could. You probably can't. But yeah, it's the Days Gone. Like, there's obviously going to be more Days Gone. That game sold very well. Bend has continued to support it after launch. Like, there will probably be more to the Days Gone universe. Putting it on PC just means at this point more people will get to play it. And I think, as Brian, you had said, like, a bunch of these games will probably be in the PlayStation Plus collection already on PS5. So some of them will be free to people who get a PS5 already if you have PlayStation Plus, which you probably do. It is a thing to help the bottom line and to help re-energize sales in a game that may not be selling a ton right now to then further help sequels down the line.
Well, like, I saw a lot of response sort of being like, well, what's the purpose of even owning a PlayStation anymore? And it's like, well, it's the same purpose it's had to be an early adopter of literally anything ever. Like, you're part enjoying the thrill of brand new worlds before anyone else can experience them. And then part of that is being a guinea pig and like playing stuff before it's like fully feature complete. But like, I don't know, like, if you wait 3 years to see a movie, like, you're going to get like the special edition UHD director's cut Blu-ray 4K with, you know, all this other nonsense in it. But you didn't see that movie 3 years ago when everyone else was.
I have. If you look
movie,
at the, so. I mean, the box office numbers for, you know, Fast and Furious or Marvel or any one of those big franchises that keeps growing, it's always the newest one. And I mean, you know, it's this snowball effect. And I honestly think that, like, I hadn't seen any of the Fast and Furious movies like a year and a half ago. And I just was like, screw it. And I paid something stupid, like $11 for 9 movies on my, like, on Blu-ray on Black Friday. And then I watched them all, and now I'm like, yeah, next time one of those comes out, I'll go see it in theaters. And like, mm-hmm. that's how you onboard people. I don't know if that makes more people jump on PS5 than cool.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
It'll be a thing that I think only helps the PlayStation 5 in the long run. And it'll be fun if there are any weird motorcycle mods for that.
They better not patch Aloy into Days Gone, because that's not fair for us, the PlayStation fans.
Real quick, it is important to note that this is very clearly not a decision being made out of financial desperation. Like, this is a company that is having zero problems whatsoever selling literally every console they manufacture. They're hot off the heels of one of the most popular consoles ever made. Days Gone sold, I imagine, fairly well for the work that they put into it, And so obviously this is them looking at this and going like, yeah, let's make a little more money on this. Not them being like, we got to do this, otherwise the whole boat's going down. Like, it's not.
Yeah,
it's not that bad.
Things are going well for the moment. And even though we may get that news alongside something like GT7 being delayed to 2022, which also came out at the same time, there is plenty to look forward to in this year for PS5 as well, even if some of those games eventually come to PC in 2027. Before we end week, I did briefly want to mention Max. I know I had put a note in the runner show. Do you have a memory card story you want to share or not? Otherwise I can skip.
But then I forgot it.
That's fair enough. It's been a year of a
week. It's the time you ate a memory card.
Yes. Yeah.
That was a Switch cartridge and it tasted terrible.
You have anything in your pockets?
No, I'm just doing nothing in my pockets today. Just really having a really kind of loosey goosey. Everything's on the tables, on the counters, on the floor.
It's my favorite wacky holiday.
We're saying goodbye to you for a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah. I'm taking paternity leave starting tomorrow because my wife is enormous with child and she's due like any minute now. And
so women love that, by the way. They love that.
That's the best description. Yeah.
Being called enormous with child.
that's going to be interesting. Obviously, this is
cloudy with a chance of meatballs.
I don't know. I'll try to play a video game while I'm doing that. Something hopefully turn-based, or maybe something that lets you pause it, I think is probably smart.
So. obviously we'll miss you in the ensuing weeks while you'll be off the show, but thank you for making the time. You know, these last few weeks we wanted to make sure we could have you on the show before you were going to be taking that time off. So happy to be able to have you on before.
I have a thing. I can't talk about it. It's a very special secret thing that's happening. It'll be going up at some point next month.
Okay. We know about the baby.
So much for that idea.
Max is going to review the baby on the IGN scale. So
exclusive unboxing, world premiere. I have, what is it? I have the monthly reviews and review show that I've been doing, and the biggest game releases of March. And then they're making me do one where it's like the biggest streaming releases. And I was like, I'm not gonna do that many of them, so it's probably stuff you already knew was coming out.
Look forward to those in Max's absence, but as soon as we can have you back on the show, of course we will. But you make sure you bring the baby. Make sure the baby is on the show with you every week.
A little person with little hands and stuff. Yeah. Weird.
Before we put you into an existential breakdown of any kind, you'll have a few busy weeks ahead. Anything you wanna tell people to, otherwise I know you had mentioned you're on a GameSpot spoiler cast.
Yeah, I finally finished Yakuza Like a Dragon after churning away at that for a while, and then the folks over at GameSpot had me on to do a spoiler cast because they are all much better people than everyone at IGN, and they actually play the Yakuza games, even when their friends recommend them and all that. So go check that out. And yeah,
Mitchell plays them. Other than that, Brian, do you have anything you want to plug or anything that you've...
Two quick things. One, I'm about 3 hours into Yakuza 0. I'm playing it, so I can gladly, yell about Yakuza for
Max. It's almost to the part where you get to do the game. It's about to start.
Yeah, almost. The men love talking, and I love beating them up.
The journey begins, chapter 7.
But speaking of cheating on our employees with more talented ones, I did Kinda Funny's sort of, not necessarily like a spoiler cast, but just sort of like a definitive show about Bloodborne. With Andy Cortez and Blessing and Tamor and Greg, and it was super fun, just us like 90 minutes just gushing about how great that game is, what we think of the lore, what it was like to platinum it, how important it is. So in case for some effing bizarre reason you've muted all the parts of this show where I've ever talked about Bloodborne, there's an hour and a half of it over there. So enjoy.
Fair enough. And Lucy, anything you want to point people to? Or has it just been too crazy of a week?
I have done absolutely nothing but work in the last month, and my muscles have begun to atrophy. That's
fair enough. Yeah. All right. We'll point you to protein supplements after this.
Great.
And of course, I do want to mention to anyone who may not have seen it, I put up a bit earlier this week, a deep dive sort of postmortem. It's very spoilery, but it's about the ending of Bugsnax. I spoke to the creative director and writer basically about how that game drastically changed from the original ending, and why they felt it was a much better game for all the changes they made. It was a really, really fun, insightful conversation that we turned into a very large piece. We've spent probably an hour talking about the creative process of going through that game, and it was just a phenomenal conversation to have, and I really enjoyed it. They let me know about the game, so please check that out if you haven't already.
That was a great piece, by the way. I really like that. Yeah,
I appreciate it.
I want to play the director's remix version where it's horrible at the end.
Yeah, I want to see what they really were going to do with the end there, but I don't want to spoil it. But anyway, also that, and then I have the Returnal preview up, as well as a preview of a new game called Stonefly that is from the creators of Creature in the Well. It looks really, really cool. I definitely recommend checking out the trailer and screenshots, because me telling you, it's like an action mech game where you're the size of a borrower in a really cool forest doesn't quite do it justice, but it's a very cool looking game. Anyway, that's going to pretty much wrap us up for this week's episode of Podcast Beyond. Thank you, Brian, Max, and Lucy for joining me for this week's episode. Thank you, as always, to our producer, Red, for helping to make the show actually happen. And thank you to everyone out there listening and watching. We'll talk to you all next week. We hope you're safe, though. We hope you're well. As always, Beyond.
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 Attention, fans of fairy tales that are magical, hilarious, and grim. The award-winning Pinna original podcast Grim, Grimmer, Grimmest has new episodes out now. While you've probably heard of the Brothers Grimm, you've never heard these tales told in quite this way. I'm Adam Gidwitz, best-selling and Newbery Honor author of books for children, and in Grim, Grimmer, Grimmest, I share the real, weird, grim fairy tales with real, weird, hilarious kids. In each episode, you not only get to hear a story, but you also get to enjoy this group guessing what'll happen next, cracking jokes, and sharing their own perspectives on the tales. Also, heckling me. They love to heckle me. The episodes are rated on a scale from grim to grimmer to grimmest, so there's always a great variety of tales to explore with your family. You can listen to Grim, Grimmer, Grimmest now wherever you get your podcasts, and be sure to follow the show so you don't miss new episodes.